my first guest, Dr. Gerald Jerry Turner, is an MD. He's a PhD. He's a professor of pathology and medicine in the departments of pathology and medicine, a gastroenterologist, I should add, at Brigham and Women's Hospital and the Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. He is the lead author, is actually the last author, of a new study published in the journal Cell, Host, and Microbe, which looks at the immune mechanism that drives diarrhea and its role in clearing infections from the body. And if you've ever wanted to see a cool science lab website, jrturnerlab.com. It's actually pretty awesome as they go. Tight junction biology. How are you doing today, Dr. Turner?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Ira.
It's great to have you. And I wanted to talk about this, I think, for so many reasons. Number one, as I said, you know, my mother was definitely one of the moms who said, it's okay, everything's going to come out and you'll clear all the poisons, whenever I had something as a kid, diarrhea-wise. Number two, because we get a lot of calls on this show about things like leaky gut and, you know, sort of these sort of like terms that are thrown about. And I'm really excited to have the person who actually studies how fluid gets in and out of the intestine on the show, just as a general concept. And number three, I want to talk about this research that you've done, because it's sort of nifty, to be honest with you. But I thought I would start off by just talking about the whole concept of gut permeability, the idea of things getting in and out of the colon, and this concept of this thing called the tight junction, which I have this vague memory of from the first year of medical school. What is a tight junction?
So basically, if you think about the lining of the intestine, and this applies to the small intestine, the colon, it actually applies to the lung, the skin, lots and lots of tissues. But it's really important for complex organisms like us to be able to compartmentalize. And in many cases, like in the gut, those compartments separate us from the outside world. If you start thinking about it, you realize the inside of the gut is really just the outside world. It's a continuous tube at both ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to keep a barrier to separate you from all that nasty stuff. And the cells that line this space do a pretty good job of that where the cells are. But the problem is that where cells join and where cells meet each other, there's a space between cells. And that can be called a shunt pathway or a paracellular, meaning between cells pathway. And that is not sealed unless there's something to seal it. So the cells making a barrier would be of no purpose whatsoever if that space was not sealed.
So the way
at the end of the day, the tight junction seals that space.
So is the way to think about it that if the cells are bricks, then the tight junction's mortar? Or is it more complicated than that because the mortar has to do other things like up stuff in and out?
Exactly. So in the skin, that's not a bad analogy, but in the intestine where things must be transported across the tight junction, so it's not an absolute seal, it's a relative seal that has selective permeability to let some things through and not other things. So in the skin, pretty good barrier, mortar is a great analogy. In the intestine, it needs to be a bit more nuanced.
Got it. So I'm now, of course, envisioning some very complicated drainage system which goes wrong all the time, like the one in my house. But that is a separate issue. And I guess in terms of what we know about this, because I know this is not really directly to the research, but I think people are always fascinated by this concept. You know, do the tight junctions, are they one of the things that are responsible for fluid flowing into your colon and things like that? Or is that more related to the cell itself? Or is it a mix? How do we get, you know, in other words, when you do, like, have liquid come out there for diarrhea or just for a regular poop or whatever, is that because the cells are excreting stuff? Or is the tight junctions, what's going on there, sort of generally?
Yeah, there's sort of three ways that fluid can move in or out of your intestines. One would be because the cells are pumping things. Usually the cells in the intestine don't pump water, but they pump salt. And the concentrations want to equilibrate and be the same on both sides of the cells, your body and the inside of the intestine. And so if you pump salt across in one direction, water will follow so that the concentrations equalize. So that's one way. The other two ways are, so that's what we would call an active transport pathway because the cells are actively pumping salt.
Right, so they pump salt and then the fluid follows the salt.
Right. The other two ways are passive and depend entirely on the salt movement for other reasons. One is across the tight junction. That's absolutely right. The other is, what if you have an ulcer in the and the cells that line the intestine are completely lost? Then you don't have a barrier at all, so then things can flow as well.
So if you break it down, if somebody were to, like, put a hole in it effectively,
yeah,
it just flows through.
That. Right. So aspirin can do that, for example.
Got it. So there's a lot going on there. By the way, this is Dr. Ira Brighton, and you're listening to Dr. Radio here on Sirius XM 110. And I'm joined by Dr. Jerry Turner, who's a professor of pathology and medicine at the Harvard Medical School and the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. And he is the lead author of this study in cell host and microbe, looking at the immune mechanism that drives diarrhea and its role in clearing infections from the body. And we're talking about sort of like how fluid gets in and out of the body. For anybody who has ever had loose stools, whether it is from an infection or from irritable bowel syndrome or from colitis, it doesn't matter what, understanding this stuff is actually really important. And there's a lot of misnomers and things that come around in terms of, like, people talking about things like leaky gut and stuff. If you have questions on diarrhea, 1-877-NYU-DOCS, which is 1-877-698-3627. So let's focus down a little more on the infection part. Now, I really do remember, like, my mom telling me if I had, like, some 24-hour bug as a kid that it was good for me. And more importantly, I remember as a medical student being told, you know, sort of from on high from the gray-bearded professor, which I guess I've now become, which is sort of scary, you know, if somebody comes in with diarrhea, don't give them anything to stop them up. Don't give them any Imodium or Lamotil or one of those medicines because you're going to make it worse. They need to clear it. Like, I distinctly remember this happening in the halls of Jacoby Hospital in the late 80s. Yeah, what do we actually know about that other than, like, graybeard dudes telling us that as medical students?
Well, so it's actually what you're saying is true, but it doesn't quite get at the question of diarrhea in the same way. So we do know that in some cases, if you give somebody something like Lamotil, like what you said, that does block the feeling, the symptoms of diarrhea. But what it does really is it blocks things from moving through the intestine. So movement is much slower. Things have more time to be reabsorbed. So it's not really the same thing as blocking the fluid movement itself. It's just giving the intestine more time to absorb because it's not doing as well, or it's secreting and there's got to be a balance back and forth. So it's a different process. And that we know that in some infections, that can be a bad thing. We also know in some infections, of the intestines, giving antibiotics can be a bad thing and can lead to something called a carrier state where somebody continues to carry the infectious organism. They're not sick, but they can infect other people.
The famous Typhoid Mary thing.
Exactly. And so those things we know. What we didn't know before our study is whether the fluid movement itself was important.
Oh, so I just want to make sure. So we sort of knew that once you actually have the diarrhea, that for certain infections, stopping it up or even trying to kill the bacteria that cause it can cause problems. But what you're talking about now is, does the body itself, is there a reason, if you will, to have the diarrhea in the first place?
Exactly. And so if you start thinking about the functions of the gastrointestinal tract in more detail, there's actually a huge amount of fluid movement that goes on that we're not aware of. So the upper gastrointestinal tract actually secretes a great amount of fluid into the inside of the intestines and the stomach that lubricates things and allows things to be digested.
How much? I always love this number. How much?
So several quarts a day.
Okay.
Or liters is, you know, we usually use metric in medicine, but several liters a day. And that all gets then, just about all of that gets reabsorbed because really by the end of the day, if you're a normal functioning person, you don't have diarrhea or anything like that, you're putting out just a few ounces of water in your stool every day. So you're really doing a great job of conserving water.
And that's really the sort of, and that's because the cells themselves are really good at reabsorbing the fluid into them.
Into
the cells, but back into you. Since the colon is, as we've decided, is actually outside of you.
Inside of it, anyway.
Yes. Right. So that's the thing. So the question really is then, you know, given all this fluid that's absorbed, if the colon senses an infection, and we'll use it in the most general terms at the moment, does it make sense for it to say, forget it, I'm not reabsorbing fluid, let's just let this stuff go?
Exactly. That's the question.
Okay. So how does one sort of go about even trying to think about this? First of all, I guess from the background point of view, are there any chemicals or like immune mediators that we know affect diarrhea that may be affected or something like that?
Yeah, so my research lab has been focusing on the tight junction, which has, as we discussed, makes that seal. And we know that some immune mediators that can alter the tight junction can contribute to the development of diarrhea. We often study this in the context of inflammatory bowel diseases like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that just disrupting the tight junction alone is often not enough, because then all you do is you increase leakiness of the intestine, but things can go in either direction. So you still need to affect the driving force for that. So why is water going to flow? There aren't water pumps that actively pump water. Water just follows its concentration gradient. So if there's a lot of salt on one side, water is going to go to that side to try and dilute it to make the concentration the same as it is on the other side. So in the end of the day, it's the cells and the active transport across the cell that defines concentration gradient that ultimately defines water movement.
Got it. So we're really talking, this is fascinating. So I guess, and people think about, oh, my gut is leaky and there's fluids getting pushed out, but it's not fluid. It's, you got to push the salt out and have the fluid follow.
Exactly.
That is so fascinating as it goes. And I guess you're right. If the tight junction had failed for whatever reason, the fluid could go either way and you could have diarrhea, constipation. It's not necessarily going to affect it one way or the other. It's where the salt is.
Exactly. People, I think even scientists forget that a lot about tight junctions. We get into the mode of thinking about the problem we're studying, and if in our problem a leaky tight junction causes fluid to move into the intestine, we just think about it that way, and we forget to think about the fact that it can go in the other direction equally well.
Got it. So you have this sort of idea of catching the salt at that, and we know there are certain immune sort of mediators that affect this that we know from, not infections, but from ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, autoimmune problems. You have all these sort of like bits of data that you're having here. How do you synthesize that?
So we've worked on it for a long time, and we've been studying how the tight junctions are regulated. And we actually discovered in the last 5 or 8 years a couple of different ways the tight junctions can be regulated. And both of these can be activated in diseases like inflammatory bowel disease. But the mechanisms are really different. So what we're starting to do is really understanding the molecular mechanisms that cause these things to happen. What that allows us to do is to really understand the processes at a detail level where we can start to make targeted drugs. So at this point, if you want to interfere with immune-driven processes that culminate in diarrhea, we have things that regulate the immune system. But obviously those have downsides also, because you need your immune system.
Right. So
more targeted ways.
So we're talking about things like steroids or even like these new TNF blockers, you know, which I guess aren't that new anymore. But as I said, I am getting older. Drugs like Remicade, things like that. These are all drugs that work to cut the immune system. But I guess it stops the tight junctions, but it also has other stuff that's negative going on. So I guess the ultimate goal here from a sort of research to, what did I always say, like bench to bedside, the whole idea of getting something to an actual patient would be to come up with something where you can sort of affect the salt flow from into the, and then stop the tight junctions from leaking rather than hit the whole immune system itself.
Right, and there's a lot of efforts on that, and so that's one of the reasons we asked this, because we want to know, so if we are really successful at making therapies like that, are we going to be doing a good thing, or will we be messing people up?
Got it. This is Dr. Ira Bright, and you're listening to Dr. Radio here on Sirius XM 110. And I'm joined by Dr. Jerry Turner, who's an MD and a PhD. He's a professor of pathology and medicine in departments of pathology and medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in the Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. And we are talking about the new study he is the senior author on in Cell Host and Microbe, looking at the immune mechanism that drives diarrhea and its role in clearing infections from the body. We are taking your diarrhea questions, and we're going to get to everybody, but I want to get through this research because it is so fascinating before we hit that. But give us a call at 1-877-NYU-DOCS, which is 1-877-698-3627. Other way to get to me is if you have a little diarrhea question, send us a little diarrhea tweet. You can tweet me either at NYU-DOCS or at Dr. Ira. Either way will work like a charm. So you have all this stuff down, and now we're at the point where we have some mice. Let's talk about those mice, and what did you do to them?
Right. So I mentioned a second ago that we found that in inflammatory diseases, for example, immune diseases, there are a couple different ways the tight junction can be regulated. I mentioned earlier that you can just damage the cells, and that's not tight junction regulation, but it does change permeability. And then we've identified two different ways things can cross the tight junction. So we talked about the tight junction being the selective permeable barrier, and we found that there are two different pathways across the tight junction, one that just lets extraordinarily small things through and is usually somewhat selective for a charge. So, for example, it might prefer to let things like sodium through but not let chloride through quite as well.
So it's really... like, you're talking, like, atom-level stuff, like, not even, like, a small molecule. You're talking as small as it gets without, like, you know, doing nuclear fission.
Yes, right. And so then there's a different pathway that lets bigger things through. They're still pretty small. So people talk about sometimes a bacteria going across the tight junction. That probably doesn't ever happen. These things, the things that go through the second pathway are quite a lot smaller than bacteria, but they're a lot bigger than a sodium ion, for example.
Could it be like something like a protein size thing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. You know, medium to small protein, not something huge, but a protein. So what we did was with the mice, we developed a way to measure all three of these processes simultaneously. This very small pathway, the somewhat larger thing pathway across the tight junction, and then cellular damage where the tight junctions don't matter because the cells are gone. And what we did was we infected mice. So we had known from previous studies that you lose barrier function to some extent during infection. But we didn't know how that was happening because people had generally just used one marker of barrier loss that didn't distinguish between these three pathways. So the first thing we did was develop this way to measure the three pathways independently. And what we found was that within 2 days of infection, this very small pathway that just let things like ions through was significantly increased in how much it allowed things to cross. So our next step was to try and understand how that was happening, what was causing that to happen.
Got it. So this is, the way I'm reading that is by letting the ions cross, it's almost like those junctions are setting themselves up to be in a diarrheal state.
Exactly. Exactly. They're letting things flow from the tissue back into the inside of the intestine.
But at this point in time, there's no other changes going on in the cell, and that would make you think, oh, there's diarrhea, there's colitis, there's whatever. There's just this change.
Right. So the animals don't have diarrhea at this point, but there's this very early change. And so what we found was there's this change in permeability or leakiness of the tight junction. And what we found was this protein that is ultimately located at the tight junction, although like all proteins, it's made in other parts of the cell. This protein called claudin 2, which is part of a big family of proteins at the tight junction, is specifically just claudin 2, not one of any of the other ones, has its expression increased within 2 days of infection. Now, it's increased just a couple fold at that early time point. It goes up to about a 10 times increase by 2 weeks of infection. But it's the very first thing that we can detect happening.
Got it. So all of a sudden, like, this is happening. It's a real thing. It's there. And the mouse is not exhibiting, like, any symptoms at all at this point in time.
No, it's really, really early in the infection.
So this would almost be like I went to a foreign country and as I get on the airplane, I start feeling symptoms. But, and again, obviously you haven't done the research on this, but the, you know, at least an assumption that you could work on would be that that is something similar might be happening to me from the E. coli or whatever that I had picked up from my beach trip.
Yeah, and actually that the model we use is a bacteria that doesn't infect people, but is a mouse, is a bacteria that affects mice and is very closely related to the E. coli that actually caused the sort of diarrhea you're talking about.
Oh, cool. So in terms of this, so you got that. Now, how do you try to figure out what actually is triggering this increase in, you know, in sodium, in the increase in electrolytes moving across, which is going to lead to diarrhea eventually?
Right. So we don't know yet that it's going to lead to diarrhea. We found that during the study. But so the first thing we asked was, why is the expression of this protein increasing, and how is that happening? And as you mentioned, we knew that some immune signaling molecules could regulate tight junctions and regulate expression of clotin 2, in fact. So we then went and measured the changes in expression of these immune signaling molecules during the course of infection. But we were really surprised because none of the ones that had been shown to increase expression of clotin 2 were increased at this very early time point. So we thought, well, they can do this, but they're probably not doing it in this infectious model. So we went looking some more, and we found a different immune signaling molecule, which we have already known was really important in clearing this infection, but was not known previously to affect tight junctions. We found that it was actually what was upregulating clotin 2 in this model.
Oh, so in other words, just to be clear, and is that IL-22, that, by the way?
That is interleukin 22 or Woo-hoo. IL-22.
So so many interleukins, they all have numbers.
Right.
And so basically the whole, I just want to make sure I have this straight. So there's sort of like a mechanism that people thought, and you didn't see that mechanism was sort of increasing this, but this interleukin 22, which we think about for colitis all the time. If I go to a conference, and there's always like a couple of guys talking about IL-22 and colitis at this point in time. But somehow this thing was triggered by the bacteria.
Right. So other people have done a lot. So it turns out that IL-22 is really important in regulating the immune system overall and immune activation in response to infection and other things. So some of that was known how that works. It turns out that the bacteria we're using as a model, like some E. coli, don't actually invade the tissues. They just sit on the inside of the intestine and stick to the top of the cells that line the intestine. So they're then able to transmit a signal through the cell and signal to immune cells on the other side.
So they're just sort of hanging.
Right. They actually have it's fascinating. They have this is not our work at all, but they assemble something that looks like a little syringe. People call it a molecular syringe. And they actually inject proteins that the bacteria makes into the inside of your cells. And so they sort of hijack function by putting their own proteins inside your cells.
Oh, that's so nasty.
Yeah, it's very, isn't it?
So it's like literally the bacteria get there and they just inject their stuff into you, and that's where sort of the infection occurs.
That's how they drive signaling. And one of the things that they do in this signaling is signal to immune cells on the other side of the lining cells and cause them to be activated. And one of the things they do when they're activated in this way is they release IL-22.
Got it. And how is this? So ultimately, so now we sort of know that the gist of your study was sort of showing that IL-22 is responsible for these changes in the tight junction and responsible very early in the process of getting an infection. Is that sort of the best way to describe why this is important?
That's sort of like the first third of the study, I would say. Absolutely.
Got it. And I just want to sort of get to the idea of, so, I mean, I'm fascinated by this, and I'm fascinated because people always talk about leaky gut and things like that, and it's always my job as sort of a clinical gastroenterologist to explain to people that, you know, wait, you know, lots of people say stuff about leaky gut, but nobody really knows what they're talking about, and if they do, they don't really have any treatments for it. I just sort of want to finish up with, where do you go from here in terms of this research, and not just sort of in a, you know, in a basic science way, although that's absolutely fascinating, but just, you know, from a more clinical point of view, how can a research like this sort of point us to potential treatments and or understanding of, like, you know, infectious diarrhea or even things like irritable bowel syndrome or colitis?
So we actually started some of this work and developed some of the tools we used in this work. So later parts of the study used genetically modified mice that either expressed lots of Clotin-2 all the time or couldn't ever express it. And those were also essential to coming to the conclusions that we've talked about. But we actually started making some of those and studying those in the context of colitis, because in inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis, the same protein, Clotin-2, has its expression increased. And so part of our question was, why would it be doing that in inflammatory bowel disease? We didn't study an inflammatory bowel disease model here, but that was our question. In other work, it's not quite complete yet, but it's certainly looking like the exact opposite is true in inflammatory bowel disease. So using mouse models of inflammatory bowel disease, if a mouse cannot make Clotin-2, it does better in a mouse in an inflammatory bowel disease model, whereas those same mice did much worse in this infectious model.
Oh, that is so weird.
So it tells us that if we want to start thinking about things to block, you know, to elevate the barrier of the tight junction, to decrease leakiness, we have to be thoughtful about who's getting what and under what conditions.
Right, and not do, and I'm just going to sort of finish up, it's not do what we do a lot in medicine, which is, it worked for disease A, so let's throw this thing at 47 other diseases, because, heck, it might work.
Right, so we're seeing, we're really surprised by this, but we're seeing the exact opposite results in our inflammatory bowel disease models.
That is, I'm going to leave it at that, because I think that is a fascinating thing. By the way, if you're waiting on the line, I've been looking at the questions. These are all super great clinical questions, and we have gastroenterology update coming up next. So hang out, because I am going to get to all of your answers on all of these diarrhea questions. But I'd like to thank you so much, Dr. Gerald Jerry Turner, MD, PhD, Professor of Pathology and Medicine in the Departments of Pathology and Medicine at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts, the senior author of a new study published in the journal Cell Host and Microbe, which looks at the immune mechanism that drives diarrhea and its role in clearing infections from the body. And if you guys ever want to, like, look at a basic science type website and, like, see some cool stuff, actually some of the coolest videos I've seen in a while, jrturnerlab.com. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
It was great. Now, this is Dr. Ira Bright, and you're listening to Dr. Radio here on Sirius XM 110. As I said, we're going to be getting to everybody with gastroenterology update after the break, but it is going to be gastroenterology update after the break, and we're going to take a short recess here on Sirius XM 110, and we'll be right back.